too powerfully to shut off now, even for Shaitan himself. So it was that Rand used the Dark One's own essence, channeled in its full strength. He held the Dark One tightly, like a dove in the grip of a hawk. And light exploded from him.
Chapter 48. A Brilliant Lance. Elaine trotted her horse among heaps of dead trollocs. The day was won. She had everyone who could stand searching for the living among the dead. So many dead. Hundreds of thousands of men and trollocs, lying in piles all across Merilor. The river's banks were slaughterhouses, the bog's mass graves, floating with corpses. Ahead of her, across the river, the heights groaned and rumbled. She'd pulled her people away from there. She could barely sit on her horse. The entire plateau collapsed upon itself, burying the dead. Elaine watched, feeling numb, feeling the ground shake. It... light! She sat up straight, feeling the swelling of power in Rand. Her attention flew away from the heights, instead focused on him. The feeling of supreme strength, the beauty of control and domination. A light shot into the sky far to the north, so bright that she gasped. The end had come.
Tom stumbled back from the entrance to the Pit of Doom, shading his eyes with his arm as light, radiant as the sun itself, burst out of the cavern. Moraine.
Light,
Tom whispered. Light it was, breaking out of the top of the mountain of Shale Ghul, a radiant beam that melted the mountain's tip and shot straight into the sky.
Min raised her hand to her breast, stepping away from the rows of wounded for whom she'd been changing linens. Rand, she thought, feeling his agonized determination. Far to the north, a beam of light rose into the air, so bright that it lit the field of Merilor even such a great distance away. The helpers and the wounded alike blinked, stumbling to their feet, shading their faces. That light, a brilliant lance in the heavens, burned away the clouds and opened up the sky. Avienda blinked at the light and knew it was Rand. It drew her back from the brink of darkness, flooding her with warmth. He was winning. He was winning! He was so strong. She saw the true warrior in him now. Nearby, Grendahl stumbled to her knees, eyes glazed over. The unraveling gateway had exploded, but not with as large a blast as last time. Weaves and the One Power had sprayed out, just as Grendahl tried to spin compulsion. The Forsaken turned to Avienda, and she adopted an adoring gaze. She bowed down, as if worshipping Avienda. The explosion, Avienda realized, numb. It had done something to the compulsion weave. Honestly, she had expected that blast to kill her. It had done something else instead.
Please, glorious one, Grendahl said. Tell me what you wish of me. Let me serve you.
Avienda looked back to the light that was Rand and held her breath.
Loghain stepped from the ruins holding a toddler, maybe 2 years of age, in his arms. The child's weeping mother took her son from his hands.
Thank you. Bless you, Ashaman. Light bless you.
Loghain stumbled to a halt amid the people. The air stank of burned flesh and dead trollocs.
"The heights are gone?" he asked.
"Gone,"
Andril said reluctantly from beside him.
"The earthquakes took them."
Loghain sighed. The prize. Was it lost, then? Would he ever be able to dig it out?
"I am a fool,"
he thought. He had abandoned that power for what? To save these refugees? People who would spurn him and hate him for what he was. People who... who looked at him with awe. Loghain frowned. These were common people, not like folk from the Black Tower who were accustomed to men who could channel. In that moment, he wouldn't have been able to tell the difference. Loghain watched with wonder as the people flocked around his Ashaman, weeping for their salvation. Elderly men took Ashaman by the hands, overcome, praising them. Nearby, a youth looked at Loghain with admiration. A dozen youths, light 100, not a hint of fear in their eyes.
"Thank you,"
the young mother said again.
"Thank you."
"The Black Tower protects," Loghain heard himself say. "Always."
"I will send him to you to be tested when he is of age," the woman promised, holding her son. "I would have him join you, if he has the talent."
The talent, not the curse. The talent. Light bathed them. He stopped. That beam of light to the north. Channeling like none he'd ever felt before. Not even at the cleansing. Such power.
"It's happening," Gabrella said, stepping up to him.
Loghain reached to his belt, then took 3 items from his pouch. Discs, half white, half black. The nearby Ashaman turned toward him, pausing in healing and comforting the people.
"Do it," Gabrella said. "Do it, seal breaker."
Loghain snapped the once unbreakable seals, one by one, and dropped the pieces to the ground. Chapter 49 Light and Shadow. Everything was dead. In the wolf dream, Perrin stumbled across a rocky wasteland without plants or soil. The sky had gone black, the dark clouds themselves vanishing into that nothingness. As he climbed atop a ridge, an entire section of the ground behind him crumbled, his stone footing shaking violently, and was pulled into the air. Beneath that was only emptiness. In the wolf dream, all was being consumed. Perrin continued forward toward Shale Ghul. He could see it, like a beacon, glowing with light. Strangely, behind, he could make out Dragonmount, though it should have been far too distant to see. As the land between them crumbled, the world seemed to be shrinking. The 2 peaks pulling toward one another, all between shattered and broken. Perrin shifted to the front of the tunnel into the Pit of Doom, then stepped in, passing the violet barrier he'd erected earlier. Lanfear lounged inside. Her hair was jet black as it had been when he'd first met her, and her face was familiar. It looked as it once had.
"I find that dream spike annoying," she said. "Did you have to place it here?"
"It keeps the other Forsaken away," Perrin said absently.
"I suppose it does that," she said, folding her arms.
"He is still ahead?" Perrin asked.
"It is the end," she said, nodding. "Something amazing just happened."
She narrowed her eyes.
"This might be the most important moment for humankind since we opened the boar."
"Let's make sure nothing goes wrong then," Perrin said, walking forward down the long maw of stone, Lanfear at his side.
At the end of the tunnel, they found an unexpected scene. Someone else was holding Kalendor, the man that Rand had been fighting earlier. Maybe that was Demandred? Perrin did not know. He was certainly one of the Forsaken. That man knelt on the floor with Nynaeve's hand on his shoulder. She stood just behind Rand and to the left. Moraine was on Rand's right, all 3 of them standing tall, eyes forward, staring into the nothingness ahead. The mountain rumbled.
"Perfect," Lanfear whispered. "I couldn't have dreamed that it could come out this well."
She eyed the 2 women.
"We will need to strike quickly. I will kill the taller woman, you the shorter one."
Perrin frowned. Something about that seemed very wrong.
Kill?
Of course, Lanfear said. If we strike quickly, there will still be time to seize control of Moradin while he holds that blade. With that, I can force Luz Theron to bow. She narrowed her eyes. He holds the Dark One between his fingers, needing only one squeeze to pinch the life, if it can be called that, away. Only one hand can save the Great Lord. In this moment, I earn my reward. In this moment, I become highest of the high.
You want to save the Dark One?
Perrin said, raising a hand to his head.
You joined us. I remember.
She glanced at him. Such an inferior tool, she said, smelling dissatisfied.
I hate having to use it. This makes me no better than Grendel,
she shivered.
If they had given me more time, I would have had you fairly.
She patted Perrin fondly on the cheek.
You are troubled. The taller one is from your village, I remember. You grew up together, I presume? I won't make you kill her, my wolf. You can kill the short one. You hate her, don't you?
Yes, I do. She stole me away from my family. It's because of her they died, really. I would have been there otherwise.
That's right, Lanfear said. We must be quick. Our moment of opportunity will not last long.
She turned toward the two women, Nynaeve and Moiraine. His friends. And then, Rand. She would kill him, Perrin knew. She would force him to bow, and then she would kill him. All along, her goal had been to put herself into a position where the Dark One himself would be helpless, and she could step in to bring him salvation. Perrin came up beside her.
We strike together, Lanfear said softly. The barriers between worlds have been broken here. They will be able to fight back unless we are quick. We must kill them at the same time.
This is wrong, Perrin thought. This is very, very wrong.
He couldn't let it happen, and yet his hands rose.
It is wrong.
He didn't know why. His thoughts wouldn't allow him to think of why.
Ready?
Lanfear said, eyes on Nynaeve. Perrin turned toward Lanfear.
I will count to three,
Lanfear said, not looking at him.
My duty, Perrin thought, is to do things Rand cannot.
This was the wolf dream. In the wolf dream, what he felt became reality.
One,
Lanfear said. He loved Fael.
Two,
he loved Fael.
Three, he loved Fael.
The compulsion vanished like smoke in the wind, thrown off like clothing changed in the blink of an eye. Before Lanfear could strike, Perrin reached out and took her by the neck. He twisted once. Her neck popped in his fingers. Lanfear crumpled, and Perrin caught her body. She was beautiful. As she died, she changed back to the other form she had been wearing before, her new body. Perrin felt a horrible stab of loss. He hadn't completely wiped what she'd done from his mind. He'd overcome it, perhaps overlaid it with something new, something right. Only the wolf dream and his ability to view himself as he should be had allowed him to accomplish that. Unfortunately, deep within, he still felt love for this woman. That sickened him. The love was nowhere near as strong as his love for Fael, but it was there. He found himself crying as he lowered her body, draped in sleek white and silver, to the floor.
I'm sorry,
he whispered. Killing a woman, particularly one who wasn't threatening him personally, It was something he'd never have thought himself capable of. Someone had needed to do it. This was one test, at least, that Rand would not need to face. It was one burden that Perrin could carry for his friend. He looked up toward Rand.
"Go," Perrin whispered. "Do what you must do. As always, I will watch your back."
The seals crumbled. The Dark One burst free. Rand held the Dark One tightly. Filled with the power, standing in a column of light, Rand pulled the Dark One into the pattern. Only here was there time. Only here could the shadow itself be killed. The force in his hand, which was at once vast and yet tiny, trembled. Its screams were the sounds of planets grinding together. A pitiful object. Suddenly Rand felt as if he were holding not one of the primal forces of existence, but a squirming thing from the mud of the sheep pens.
"You are really nothing," Rand said, knowing the Dark One's secrets completely. "You would never have given me rest as you promised, Father of Lies. You would have enslaved me as you would have enslaved the others. You cannot give oblivion. Rest is not yours. Only torment."
The Dark One trembled in his grip.
"You horrible, pitiful might," Rand said.
Rand was dying. His lifeblood flowed from him, and beyond that, the amount of the powers he held would soon burn him away. He held the Dark One in his hand. He began to squeeze, then stopped. He knew all secrets. He could see what the Dark One had done. And light, Rand understood. Much of what the Dark One had shown him was lies. But the vision Rand himself had created, the one without the Dark One, was truth. If he did as he wished, he would leave men no better than the Dark One himself.
"What a fool I have been,"
Rand yelled, thrusting the Dark One back through the pit from where it had come. Rand pushed his arms to the side, grabbing twin pillars of Sayadar and Sayadin with his mind, coated with the true power drawn through Moradin, who knelt on the floor, eyes open, so much power coursing through him he couldn't even move. Rand hurled powers forward with his mind and braided them together. Sayadin and Sayadar at once, the true power surrounding them and forming a shield on the boar. He wove something majestic, a pattern of interlaced Sayadar and Sayadin in their pure forms. Not fire, not spirit, not water, not earth, not air. Purity. Light itself. This didn't repair. It didn't patch. It forged anew. With this new form of the power, Rand pulled together the rent that had been made here long ago by foolish men. He understood, finally, that the Dark One was not the enemy. It never had been.
Moiraine grabbed Nynaeve beside her, moving only by touch, for that light was blinding. She pulled Nynaeve to her feet. Together they ran, away from the burning light behind, up the corridor, scrambling. Moiraine burst into open air without realizing it, and almost ran off the edge of the path, which would have sent her stumbling down the steep slope. Someone caught her.
"I have you," Tom's voice said as she collapsed into his arms, completely drained.
Nynaeve fell to the ground nearby, gasping. Tom turned Moiraine away from the corridor, but she refused to look away. She opened her eyes, though she knew that the light was too intense, and she saw something. Rand and Moradin, standing in the light as it expanded outward to consume the entire mountain in its glow. The blackness in front of Rand hung like a hole, sucking in everything. Slowly, bit by bit, that hole shrank away until it was just a pinprick. It vanished.
Epilogue. to see the answer. Rand slipped on his blood. He couldn't see. He carried something, something heavy, a body. He stumbled up the tunnel.
Closing, he thought. It's closing.
The ceiling lowered like a shutting jaw, stone grinding against stone. With a gasp, Rand reached open air as the rocks slammed shut behind him, locking together like clenched teeth. Rand tripped. The body in his arms was so heavy. He slipped to the ground. He could see, just faintly, a figure kneeling down beside him.
Yes,
a woman whispered. He did not recognize the voice.
Yes, that's good. That is what you need to do.
He blinked, his vision fuzzy. Was that Aiel clothing? An old woman with gray hair? Her form retreated, and Rand reached toward her, not wanting to be alone, wanting to explain himself.
I see the answer now, he whispered. I asked the Aelfin the wrong question. To choose is our fate. If you have no choice, then you aren't a man at all. You're a puppet.
Shouting, Rand felt heavy. He plunged into unconsciousness. Matt stood up as the mist of Mashadar burned away from him and vanished. The field was littered with the bodies of those eerie pockmarked Trollocs. He looked upward through the vanishing wisps and found the sun directly overhead.
Well, you're a sight, he said to it. You should come out more often. You have a pretty face.
He smiled, then looked down at the dead man by his feet. Padan Fane looked like a bundle of sticks and moss, the flesh slipping from his bones. The blackness of the dagger had spread across his rotting skin. It stank. Almost, Matt reached for that dagger. Then he spat.
For once, he said, a gamble I don't want to touch.
He turned his back on it and walked off. 3 steps away, he found his hat. He grinned, snatched it up, and set it on his head, then began whistling as he rested the Ashandarai on his shoulder and strolled away. The dice had stopped rolling in Matt's head. Behind, the dagger, ruby and all, melted away into the mess that had been Padan Fane. Perrin walked wearily into the camp they had set up at the base of Shale Ghul after the fighting had ceased. He dropped his coat. The air felt good on his bare chest. He tucked Mahalainir away in its place at his belt. A good smith never neglected his tools, for all that sometimes carrying them felt as if they would bear him down to the grave itself. Wearily into the camp they had set up at the base of Shale Ghul after the fighting had ceased. He dropped his coat. The air felt good on his bare chest. He tucked Mahalainir away in its place at his belt. A good smith never neglected his tools, for all that sometimes carrying them felt as if they would bear him down to the grave itself. He thought that he could sleep 100 days straight. But not yet. Not yet. Fael.
No.
Deep down he knew he had to face something horrible about her. But not yet. For the moment he shoved that worry, that terror, away. The last spirits of the wolves faded back into the wolf dream.
Farewell, young bull. Find what you seek, young bull. The hunt ends, but we will hunt again, young bull.
Perrin plodded among rows of wounded men and Aiel celebrating the defeat of the Shadow Spawn. Some tents were filled with moans, others with yells of victory. People of all stripes ran through the now blooming valley of Thakandar, some hunting for the wounded, others crying in joy and whooping as they met with friends who had survived the last dark moments. Aiel called to Perrin.
Ho, blacksmith, join us!
But he did not enter their celebrations. He looked for the guards. Someone around here had to be level-headed enough to worry about a rogue murdrawl or Drakkar taking the opportunity to try for a little revenge. Sure enough, he found a ring of defenders at the center of camp guarding a large tent. What of Rand? No colors swirled in his vision, no image of Rand. Perrin felt no more tugging, pulling him in any direction. Those seemed like very bad signs. He pushed through the guards, numb, and entered the tent. Where had they found a tent this large on this battlefield? Everything had been trampled, blown away, or burned. The inside smelled of herbs and was partitioned with several hanging cloths. "I've tried everything," a voice whispered. Damer Flynn's voice. "Nothing changes what is happening. He..." Perrin pushed in on Nynaeve and Flynn, standing beside a pallet behind one of the partitions. Rand, cleaned and dressed, lay there, eyes closed. Moraine knelt beside him, her hand on his face, whispering so softly none but he could hear.
"You did well, Rand. You did well."
"He lives?"
Perrin asked, wiping the sweat from his face with his hand.
"Perrin!"
Nynaeve said.
"Oh, Light, you look horrible. Sit down, you lummox. You're going to fall over. I don't want two of you to tend."
Her eyes were red.
"He's dying anyway, isn't he?" Perrin asked. "You got him out alive, but he's still going to die."
"Sit,"
Nynaeve commanded, pointing to a stool.
"Dogs obey that command, Nynaeve," Perrin said. "Not wolves."
He knelt down, resting a hand on Rand's shoulder.
"I couldn't feel your tugging or see the visions," Perrin thought. "You're no longer Tavirin. I suspect neither am I."
"Have you sent for the three?" Perrin asked.
"Min, Elaine, Avienda? They need to visit him a last time."
"That's all you can say?"
Nynaeve snapped. He looked up at her. The way she folded her arms made it look as if she were holding herself together, wrapping her arms about herself to stop from crying.
"Who else died?"
Perrin asked, bracing himself. It was obvious from her expression she had lost one already.
"Egwene."
Perrin closed his eyes, breathing out.
"Egwene. Light. No masterwork comes without a price," he thought. "That doesn't mean it's not worth forging. Still, Egwene?" "It's not your fault, Nynaeve," he said, opening his eyes.
"Of course it's not. I know it's not, you numb-brained fool."
She turned away. He stood up, embracing her and patting her back with his smith's hands.
"I'm sorry."
"I left to save you,"
Nynaeve whispered.
"I only came along to protect you."
"You did, Nynaeve. You protected Rand so he could do what he had to do."
She shook, and he let her weep.
Light.
He shed a few tears himself. Nynaeve pulled away sharply after a moment, then barreled out of the tent.
"I tried,"
Flynn said desperately, looking at Rand.
"Nynaeve did too. Together we tried, with Moraine Sedai's Angreal. Nothing worked. Nobody knows how to save him."
"You did what you could,"
Perrin said, peeking around the next partition. Another man lay on the pallet there.
"What is he doing here?"
"We found them together," Flynn said. "Rand must have carried him out of the pit. We don't know why the Lord Dragon would save one of the Forsaken, but it doesn't matter. We can't heal him either. They're dying, both of them."
"Send for Min, Elaine, and Avienda,"
Perrin said again. He hesitated.
"Did they all survive?"
"The Aiel girl took a beating," Flynn said. "She came stumbling into camp, half carried by a horrid-looking Aes Sedai who had made a gateway for her. She'll live, though I don't know how well she'll walk in years to come."
"Let them know. All of them."
Flynn nodded, and Perrin stepped out after Nynaeve. He found what he'd hoped to see, the reason why she'd left so quickly. Just outside the tent, Lan held her tightly. The man looked as bloodied and tired as Perrin felt. Their eyes met, and they nodded to one another.
Several of the Windfinders have opened a gateway between here and Marilor, Lan said to Perrin. The Dark One is sealed away again. The blasted lands are blooming, and gateways can open here again.
Thank you, Perrin said, passing him by.
Has anyone heard anything about Fail? No, Blacksmith. The Hornsounder saw her last, but she left him and entered the battlefield to draw the Trollocs away from him. I'm sorry.
Perrin nodded. He'd already spoken with Matt and Ulver. It seemed to him that he'd been avoiding thinking about what must have happened.
Don't think about it, he told himself. Don't you dare.
He steeled himself, then went to seek the gateway Lan had mentioned.
Excuse me,
Loyal asked the maidens sitting beside the tent.
Have you seen Matrim Coffin?
Usquai,
one of them asked, laughing, holding up the skin.
No,
Loyal said.
I have to find Matrim Coffin and get his account of the battle, you see, while it's fresh. I need everyone to tell me what they saw and heard so that I can write it down. There will never be a better time.
And, he admitted to himself, he wanted to see Matt and Perrin. See that they were all right. So much had happened. He wanted to talk to his friends and make certain they were well. With what was happening to Rand. The Aiel woman smiled at him drunkenly. Loyal sighed, then continued through the camp. The day was coming to an end. The day of the last battle. It was the fourth age now, wasn't it? Could an age start in the middle of a day? That would be inconvenient for the calendars, wouldn't it? But everyone agreed. Rand had sealed the boar at noon. Loyal continued through the camp. They hadn't moved from the base of Shale Ghul. Nynaeve said she was too worried to move Rand. Loyal kept searching, peeking into tents. In the next, he found the grizzled General Iteralda surrounded by four Aes Sedai.
Look, Iteralda said, I've served the kings of Ar-Adaman all of my life. I swore oaths.
Al-Salam is dead, Saren Sedai said from beside the chair. Someone has to take the throne. There is confusion in Saldaea, Elswell Sedai added. The succession is messy, with the ties it has to Andor now. Ar-Adaman cannot afford to be leaderless. You must take the throne, Rodal Iteralda. You must do it quickly.
The Merchant Council.
All dead or vanished, another Aes Sedai said.
I swore oaths.
And what would your king have you do, Yukiri Sedai asked. Let the kingdom disintegrate? You must be strong, Lord Iteralda. This is not a time for Ar-Adaman to be without a leader.
Loyal slipped away and shook his head, feeling sorry for the man. Four Aes Sedai? Iteralda would be crowned before the day was out. Loyal stopped by the main healing tent again to check if anyone had seen Matt. He had been to this battlefield, and people said he was smiling and healthy, but... Well, Loyal wanted to see for himself. Wanted to talk to him. Inside the tent, Loyal had to slouch, lest he brush his head on the ceiling. A large tent for humans was small by Ogier standards. He peeked in on Rand. His friend looked worse than before. Lan stood by the wall. He wore a crown. It was just a simple silver band, where the Hadori used to rest. That wasn't odd, but the matching one Nynaeve wore did give Loyal a start.
It's not fair, Nynaeve whispered. Why should he die when the other one gets better?
Nynaeve seemed troubled. She still had red eyes, but before she had chibied anyone who mentioned them, so Loyal said nothing. Humans often seemed to want him to say nothing, which was odd for people who lived lives so hastily. She looked at Loyal, and he bowed his head to her.
Loyal, she said, how goes your search?
Not well,
he said with a grimace.
Perrin ignored me and Matt cannot be found.
Your stories can wait a few days, Builder, Lan said.
Loyal did not argue. Lan was a king now, after all. But, no, the stories could not wait. They had to be fresh, so his history could be accurate. "It's terrible," Flynn said, still looking at Rand. "But, Nynaeve," said I, "it's so strange. None of the three seem to care at all. Shouldn't they be more worried?" Loyal left them, though he did check in on Avienda in a nearby tent. She sat while several women attended to her twisted, bleeding feet. She had lost several of her toes. She nodded her head to Loyal. The healings done so far had apparently taken away her pain, for though she seemed tired, she did not seem in agony.
"Matt?"
he asked hopefully.
"I have not seen him, Loyal, son of Arend, son of Halen," Avienda replied. "At least, not since you asked a short time ago."
Loyal blushed, then left her. He passed Elaine and Min outside. He would get their stories. He had already asked a few questions, but the three to Viren, they were the most important. Why were humans always bustling around so quickly, never sitting still? Never any time to think? This was an important day. It was odd, though. Min and Elaine. Shouldn't they be at Rand's side? Elaine seemed to be taking reports on casualties and refugee supplies, and Min sat looking up at Shale Ghul, a far-off expression in her eyes. Neither went in to hold Rand's hand as he slipped toward death.
"Well,"
Loyal thought,
"maybe Matt sneaked by me and went back to Marilor."
Never staying put, these men. Always so hasty. Matrim Cawthon sauntered into the Seanchan camp on the south side of Marilor, away from the piles of the dead. All around, Seanchan men and women gasped, hands to their mouths. He tipped his hat to them.
"The Prince of the Ravens!"
Hushed tones moved through camp ahead of him, passing from mouth to mouth like the last bottle of brandy on a cold night. He walked right up to Tuon, who stood at a large map table at the camp center, talking to Seleucia. Kareed, Matt noticed, had survived. The man probably felt guilty about it. Tuon looked at Matt and frowned.
"Where have you been?"
Matt raised his arm, and Tuon frowned, looking upward at nothing. Matt spun and thrust his hand farther toward the sky. Night flowers began to explode high above the camp. Matt grinned. Aludra had taken a little convincing, but only a little. She did so like to make things explode. It was not truly dusk yet, but the show was still grand. Aludra now had half of the Dragoners trained to build fireworks and handle her powders. She seemed far less secretive than she once had. The sounds of the display washed over them.
"Fireworks?" Tuon said.
"The best bloody fireworks show in the history of my land or yours," Matt said. Tuon frowned. The explosions reflected in her dark eyes.
"I am with child," she said. "The Doomseer has confirmed it."
Matt felt a jolt, as sure as if a firework had gone off inside of his stomach. An heir. A son, no doubt. What odds that it was a boy? Matt forced a grin. "Well, I guess I'm off the hook now. You have an heir."
"I have an heir," Tuon said, "but I am the one off that hook. Now I can kill you if I want."
Matt felt his grin widen. "Well, we'll have to see what we can work out. Tell me, do you ever play dice?" Perrin sat down among the dead and finally started weeping. Gaishine in white and city women picked through the dead. There was no sign of Fael. None at all.
"I can't keep going."
How long had it been since he'd slept? That one night in Mayenne. His body complained that it hadn't been nearly enough. He'd pushed himself long before that, spending the equivalent of weeks in the wolf dream. Lord and Lady Bashir were dead, Fail would have been queen if she'd lived. Perrin shook and trembled, and he could not make himself move any more. There were hundreds of thousands of dead on this battlefield. The other searchers ignored a body if it had no life, marking it and moving on. He had tried to spread the word for them to seek Fail, but the searchers had to look for the living. Fireworks exploded in the darkening sky. Perrin buried his head in his hands, then felt himself slide sideways and collapse among the corpses.
Mogadin winced at the display in the sky. Each explosion made her see that deadly fire again, tearing through the Sharans, that flare of light, that moment of panic, and then darkness. She'd awakened some time later, left for dead among the bodies of Sharans. When she'd come to, she had found these fools all across the battlefield, claiming to have won the day. Claiming? She thought, wincing again as another round of fireworks sounded. The great lord has fallen. All was lost. No. No. She continued forward, keeping her step firm, unsuspicious. She had strangled a worker, then taken her form, channeling only a tiny bit and inverting the weave. That should let her escape from this place. She wove around bodies, ignoring the stink to the air. All was not lost. She still lived, and she was of the Chosen. That meant that she was an empress among her lessers. Why, the great lord was imprisoned again, so he could not punish her. And certainly most, if not all, of the other Chosen were dead or imprisoned. If that were true, no one could rival her in knowledge. This might actually work out. This might be a victory. She stopped beside an overturned supply cart, clutching her corsouvre. It was still whole, thankfully. She smiled with a wide grin, then wove a small light to illuminate her way. Yes. Look at the open sky, not the thunder clouds. She could turn this to her advantage. Why, in the matter of a few years, she could be ruling the world herself. Something cold snapped around her neck. Mogadin reached up with horror, then screamed. No! Not again! Her disguise melted away, and the one power left her. A smug-looking Suldam stood behind. They said we could not take any who called themselves Aes Sedai. But you do not wear one of their rings, and you skulk like one who has done something wrong. I do not think you will be missed at all. Free me, Mogadin said, scratching at the Eidam. Free me, you— Pain sent her to the ground, writhing. I am called Shannan, the Suldam said, as another woman approached, a Damani in tow. But you may call me mistress. I think that we should return to Ebu Dar quickly. Her companion nodded, and the Damani made a gateway. They had to drag Mogadin through. Nynaeve emerged from the healing tent at Shael Ghul. The sun was almost below the horizon. He's dead, she whispered to the small crowd gathered outside. Saying the words felt like dropping a brick onto her own feet. She did not cry. She had shed those tears already. That did not mean that she didn't hurt. Lan came out of the tent behind her, putting an arm around her shoulders. She raised her hand to his. Nearby, Min and Elaine looked at one another. Gregorin whispered to Darlin. He had been found, half dead, in the wreckage of his tent. Both of them frowned at the women. Nynaeve overheard part of what Gregorin said. Expected the Aiel savage to be heartless, and maybe the Queen of Andor, but the other one, not a tear. They're shocked, Darlin replied. No, Nynaeve thought, studying Min and Elaine. Those three know something I do not. I'll have to beat it out of them. Excuse me, Nynaeve said, walking away from Lan. He followed. She raised an eyebrow at him.
You shall not be rid of me in the next few weeks, Nynaeve, he said, love pulsing through his bond, even if you want it.
Stubborn ox, she grumbled. As I recall, you are the one who insisted on leaving me so that you could march alone toward your presumed destiny.
And you were right about that, Lan said, as you so often are.
He said it so calmly that it was hard to be mad at him. Besides, it was the women she was mad at. She chose Avienda first and stalked up to her, Lan by her side. With Ruark dead, Avienda was saying to Sorelia and Bear, I think that whatever I saw must be able to change. It has already. I saw your vision, Avienda, Bear said. Or something like it, through different eyes. I think it is a warning of something we must not let happen. The other two nodded, then glanced at Nynaeve and grew as still-faced as Aes Sedai. Avienda was just as bad as the others, completely calm as she sat in her chair, her feet wrapped in bandages. She might walk again some day, but she would never fight. Nynaeve Almera, Avienda said. Did you hear me say that Rand is dead? Nynaeve demanded. He went silently. He that was wounded has woken from the dream, Avienda said evenly. It is as all must do. His death was accomplished in greatness, and he will be celebrated in greatness. Nynaeve leaned down. All right, she said menacingly, embracing the source. Out with it. I chose you because you can't run away from me. Avienda displayed a moment of what might have been fear. It was gone in a flash. Let us prepare his pyre.
Perrin ran in the wolf dream, alone. Other wolves howled their sorrow for his grief. After he passed them, they would return to their celebrations, but that did not make their empathy any less real. He did not howl. He did not cry out. He became young bull, and he ran. He did not want to be here. He wanted slumber, true slumber. There he could not feel the pain. Here he could.
I shouldn't have left her, a thought of man. Why did it creep in? But what could I do? I promised not to treat her like glass.
Run. Run fast. Run until exhaustion came.
I had to go to Rand. I had to. But in doing so, I failed her.
To the two rivers in a flash. Back out along the river. The waste, then back. A long run toward Falma.
How could I be expected to hold them both, then let one go?
To Tyr, then to the two rivers. A blur, growling, moving as quickly as he could. Here. Here he had wet her. Here he howled. Caemlyn, Cairhien, Dumais Wells. Here he saved one of them. Cairhien, Gildon, Maldon. Here he saved another. Two forces in his life. Each had pulled at him. Young Bull finally collapsed near some hills somewhere in Andor. A familiar place.
The place where I met Elias.
He became Perrin again. His thoughts were not wolf thoughts, his troubles not wolf troubles. He stared up at the sky that was now, after Rand's sacrifice, empty of clouds. He had wanted to be with his friend as he died. This time he would be with Fael, where she had died. He wanted to scream, but it would do no good.
I have to let go, don't I?
he whispered toward that sky.
Light, I don't want to. I learned from Malden. I didn't do it again. I did what I was supposed to this time.
Somewhere nearby, a bird cried in the sky. Wolves howled, hunting.
I learned.
A bird's cry. It sounded like a falcon. Perrin threw himself to his feet, spinning.
There!
He vanished in an instant, appearing on an open field he did not recognize. No, he knew this field. He knew it. This was Marilor, only without the blood, without the grass churned to mud, without the land blasted and broken. Here he found a tiny falcon, as small as his hand, crying softly with a broken leg pinned beneath a rock. Its heartbeat was faint. Perrin roared as he woke, clawing his way out of the wolf dream. He stood up on the field of bodies, shouting into the night sky. Searchers nearby scattered in fear. Where? In the darkness, could he find the same place? He ran, stumbling over corpses, through pits made by channelers or dragons. He stopped, looking one way, then another. Where? Where? Flowery soap. A hint of perfume in the air. Perrin dashed toward it, throwing his weight against the corpse of an enormous Trolloc lying almost chest-high atop other bodies. Beneath it, he found the carcass of a horse. Unable to truly consider what he was doing, or of the strength it should have required, Perrin pulled the horse aside. Beneath, Fael lay bloodied in a small hollow in the ground, breathing shallowly. Perrin cried out and dropped to his knees, cradling her in his arms, breathing in her scent. It took him only 2 heartbeats to shift into the wolf dream, carry Fael to Nynaeve far to the north, and shift out. Seconds later, he felt her being healed in his arms, unwilling to let go of her even for that. Fael, his falcon, trembled and stirred. Then she opened her eyes and smiled at him.
The other heroes were gone. Birgitta remained as evening approached. Nearby, soldiers prepared Randall Thor's pyre. Birgitta could not stay much longer, but for now, yes, she could stay a short time. The pattern would allow it. Elaine, Birgitta said, do you know something about the dragon? Elaine shrugged in the waning light. The 2 stood at the back of the crowd, gathering to watch the dragon reborn's pyre be lit. I know what you're planning, Birgitta said to Elaine. With the horn. And what am I planning? To keep it, Birgitta said. And the boy. To have it as an Andoran treasure, perhaps a nation's weapon. Perhaps. Birgitta smiled. It's a good thing I sent him away, then. Elaine turned to her, ignoring those preparing Rand's pyre. What? I sent Olver away, Birgitta said. With guards, I trust. I told Olver to find some place nobody would look, a place he could forget, and toss the horn into it, preferably the ocean. Elaine exhaled softly, then turned back toward the pyre. Insufferable woman, she hesitated. Thank you for saving me from having to make that decision. I thought you'd feel that way. Actually, Birgitta had assumed it would take a long time before Elaine understood, but Elaine had grown in the last few weeks. Anyway, I must be far from insufferable since you've done an excellent job of suffering me these last months. Elaine turned to her again. That sounds like a farewell. Birgitta smiled. She could feel it sometimes, when it was coming. It is. Elaine looked sorrowful. Must it be? I'm being reborn, Elaine, Birgitta whispered. Now. Somewhere, a woman is preparing to give birth, and I will go to that body. It's happening.
I don't want to lose you. Birgitta chuckled. Well, perhaps we will meet again. For now, be happy for me, Elaine. This means the cycle continues. I get to be with him again. Gaidal. I'll be only a few years younger than he. Elaine took her arm, eyes watering. Love and peace, Birgitta. Thank you. Birgitta smiled, then closed her eyes, and let herself drift away.
As evening settled onto the land, Tam looked up across what had once been the most feared place of all. Shale Ghul. The last flickers of light showed plants growing here, flowers blooming, grass growing up around fallen weapons and over corpses.
Is this your gift to us, son? He wondered. A final one?
Tam lit his torch from the small flickering flame that crackled in the pit nearby. He went forward, passing lines of those who stood in the night. They had not told many of Rand's funeral rites. All would have wanted to come. Perhaps all deserved to come. The Aes Sedai were planning an elaborate memorial for Egwene. Tam preferred a quiet affair for his son. Rand could finally rest. He walked past people standing with heads bowed. None carried light save Tam. The others waited in the dark. A small crowd of perhaps 200 encircling the bier. Tam's torch flickered orange off solemn faces. In the evening, even with his light, it was hard to tell Aiel from Aes Sedai, Two Rivers Man from Tyran King. All were shapes in the night, saluting the body of the dragon reborn. Tam went up to the bier, beside Tom and Moraine, who were holding hands, faces solemn. Moraine reached over and gently squeezed Tam's arm. Tam looked at the corpse, gazing down into his son's face by the fire's light. He did not wipe the tears from his eyes.
You did well, my boy. You did so well.
He lit the pyre with a reverent hand.
Min stood at the front of the crowd. She watched Tam, with slumped shoulders, bow his head before the flames. Eventually the man walked back to join the Two Rivers folk. Abel Cawthon embraced him, whispering softly to his friend. Heads in the night, shadows, turned toward Min, Avienda, and Elaine. They expected something from the three of them, a show of some sort. Solemnly, Min stepped forward with the other two. Avienda needed the help of two maidens to walk, though she was able to stand by leaning on Elaine. The maidens withdrew to leave the three of them alone before the pyre. Elaine and Min stood with her, watching the fire burn, consuming Rand's corpse. "I've seen this," Min said. "I knew it would come the day I first met him. We three together. Here." Elaine nodded. "So now what?" "Now," Avienda said. "Now we make sure that everyone well and truly believes he is gone." Min nodded, feeling the pulsing throb of the bond in the back of her mind. It grew stronger each moment.
Randall Thor, just Randall Thor, woke in a dark tent by himself. Someone had left a candle burning beside his pallet. He breathed deeply, stretching. He felt as if he'd just slept long and deep. Shouldn't he be hurting? Stiff? Aching? He felt none of that. He reached to his side and felt no wounds there. No wounds. For the first time in a long while, there was no pain. He almost didn't know what to make of it. Then he looked down and saw that the hand prodding his side was his own left hand. He laughed, holding it up before him. A mirror, he thought. I need a mirror. He found one beyond the next partition of the tent. Apparently he'd been left completely alone. He held up the candle, looking into the small mirror. Moradin's face looked back at him. Rand touched his face, feeling it. In his right eye hung a single saw, black, shaped like the dragon's fang. It didn't move. Rand slipped back into the portion of the tent where he'd awakened. Layman's sword was there, sitting atop a neat pile of mixed clothing. Olivia apparently hadn't known what he would want to wear. She had been the one to leave these things, of course, along with a bag of coins from a variety of nations. She hadn't ever cared much for either clothing or coin, but she had known he'd need both. "She will help you die." Rand shook his head, dressing and gathering the coins and the sword, then slipping out of the tent. Someone had left a good horse, a dappled gelding tied not far away. That would do him well. From dragon reborn to horse thief, he chuckled to himself. Bareback would have to do. He hesitated. Nearby in the darkness, people were singing. This was Shale Ghul, but not as he remembered it. A blooming Shale Ghul, full of life. The song they sang was a Borderlander funeral song. Rand led the horse through the night to get a little closer. He peered between the tents to where three women stood around a funeral pyre. Moradin, he thought. He's being cremated with full honors as the dragon reborn. Rand backed away, then mounted the dapple. As he did so, he noticed one figure who was not standing by the fire. A solitary figure who looked toward him when all the other eyes were turned away. Cadswain. She looked him up and down, eyes reflecting firelight from the glow of Rand's pyre. Rand nodded, waited for a moment, then turned the horse and heeled it away.
Cadswain watched him go. Curious, she thought. Those eyes had confirmed her suspicions. That would be information she could use. No need to keep watching this sham of a funeral, then. She walked away through the camp, and there strolled directly into an ambush. Saren, she said as the women fell in around her. Yukiri, Lirella, Rubinda, what is this? We would like direction, Rubinda said. Direction? Cadswain snorted. Ask the new Amerlin once you find some poor woman to put into the position. The other women continued to walk with her. As it hit her, Cadswain stopped in place. Oh, blood and ashes, no, Cadswain said, spinning on them. No, no, no. The women smiled in an almost predatory way. You always talked so wisely to the dragon reborn of responsibility, Yukiri said. You speak of how the women of this age need better training, Saren added. It is a new age, Lirella said. We have many challenges ahead of us, and we will need a strong Amerlin to lead us. Cadswain closed her eyes, groaning.
Rand breathed a sigh of relief as he left Cadswain behind. She did not raise an alarm, though she had continued to study him as he put distance between them. Glancing over his shoulder, he noticed her walking off with some other Aes Sedai. She worried him. She probably suspected something he wished she did not. It was better than her raising an alarm, though. He sighed, fishing in his pocket where he found a pipe. Thank you, Olivia, for that, he thought, packing it with tabak from a pouch he found in the other pocket. By instinct, he reached for the one power to light it. He found nothing. No cyadine in the void. Nothing. He paused, then smiled and felt an enormous relief. He could not channel. Just to be certain, he tentatively reached for the true power. Nothing there, either. He regarded his pipe, riding up a little incline to the side of Thakandar, now covered in plants. No way to light the tabak. He inspected it for a moment in the darkness, then thought of the pipe being lit, and it was. Rand smiled and turned south. He glanced over his shoulder. All three women at the pyre had turned from it to look directly at him. He could make them out, though not much else, by the light of the burning body. I wonder which of them will follow me, he thought, then smiled deeper. Randall Thor, you've built up quite a swelled head, haven't you? Assuming one or more would follow. Maybe none of them would. Or maybe all of them would in their own time. He found himself chuckling. Which would he pick? Min? But no, to leave Avienda? Elaine? No. He laughed. He couldn't pick. He had three women in love with him and didn't know which he would like to have follow him. Any of them. All of them. Light man, you're hopeless. Hopelessly in love with all three, and there's no way out of it. He heeled the horse into a canter, heading farther south. He had a purse full of coin, a good horse, and a strong sword. Layman's sword, which was a better sword than he'd have wanted. It might draw attention. It was a true heron-marked sword with a fine blade. Did Olivia realize how much money she'd given him? She didn't know a thing about coins. She'd probably stolen a lot of it, so he wasn't just a horse thief. Well, he'd told her to go get him some gold, and she'd done it. He could buy an entire farm in the Two Rivers with what he carried. South. East or west would do, but he figured he wanted to go someplace away from it all for good. South first. Then maybe out west, along the coast. Maybe he could find a ship. There was so much of the world he hadn't seen. He'd experienced a few battles. He'd gotten caught up in a huge game of houses. Many things he hadn't wanted anything to do with. He'd seen his father's farm and palaces. He'd seen a lot of places. He just had not had the leisure to have a real look at much of the world. That will be new, he thought. Traveling without being chased, or having to rule here or there. Traveling where he could just sleep in a barn in exchange for splitting someone's firewood. He thought about that and found himself laughing, riding on south and smoking his impossible pipe. As he did so, a wind rose up around him, around the man who had been called Lord, Dragon Reborn, King, Killer, Lover, and Friend. The wind rose high and free, to soar in an open sky with no clouds. It passed over a broken landscape scattered with corpses not yet buried. A landscape covered at the same time with celebrations. It tickled the branches of trees that had finally begun to put forth buds. The wind blew southward, through knotted forests, over shimmering plains and toward lands unexplored. This wind, it was not the ending. There are no endings, and never will be endings, to the turning of the wheel of time. But it was an ending. And it came to pass in those days, as it had come before and would come again, that the dark lay heavy on the land and weighed down the hearts of men, and the green things failed, and hope died. And men cried out to the Creator, saying, O light of the heavens, light of the world, let the Promised One be born of the mountain, according to the prophecies, as he was in ages past and will be in ages to come. Let the Prince of the Morning sing to the land that green things will grow, and the valleys give forth lambs. Let the arm of the Lord of the Dawn shelter us from the dark, and the great sword of justice defend us. Let the dragon ride again,
on the winds of time.
From Charal Drianon Te Calamon, The Cycle of the Dragon. Author unknown. The Fourth Age.
He came like the wind. Like the wind touched everything. And like the wind was gone. From The Dragon Reborn, by Loyal, son of Arendt, son of Halen, The Fourth Age. The end of the last book of The Wheel of Time.
We hope you've enjoyed A Memory of Light, a Macmillan audio production from Tor Books. Text copyright 2012 by the Bandersnatch Group, Inc. Production copyright 2012 by Macmillan Audio. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.